We appreciate it. Next item, please.
596, amend an intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County to restructure the domestic violence victim advocates for the domestic violence reduction unit.
Very good. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Ron Mason. I'm a sergeant with the Portland Police Domestic Violence Reduction Unit and the Domestic Violence Enhanced Response Team. And with me today, I have Rose Bach from the Domestic Violence Sexual Coordination Office from Multnomah County, and Vanessa Palacios, who is a divert advocate, to give you some information as well.
Thank you all for being here. We appreciate it.
This ordinance amendment is to 3000-4753 for amending the IGA with Multnomah County. We have had domestic violence advocates for more than 25 years with the police bureau housed in the same facility. The last few years, we have had a difficulty in maintaining permanent staff with the advocates that work in the office. There's a lot of training that goes into each of these folks. We ask them coming into it that they would be highly proficient in what they do with at least 2 years of experience. They have bachelor's degrees. They are some of the best that are coming to work in these high stress and high volatility situations. What we have learned from talking with advocates that have left and went on to other places is that a significant amount of the reason that they're leaving is because of the pay. They're making between $14 and $16 an hour being highly skilled professionals. And we've tried to address that with the nonprofit agencies that we've worked with. They understandably have a schedule of pay for all of their advocates that work for their agencies and have been unable to raise the level of pay to something that would be significant enough to be able to stop the massive turnover that we receive. Usually about every 10 months we're experiencing turnover in these advocate positions, which is leads to a difficulty in being able to do this work.
Could you clarify the exact role that the advocates play?
Yes, we're talking about two different positions. Two of the positions, there's three positions that are in this IGA. Two of the positions are domestic violence response advocates. They work in the afternoon shift to respond to scenes of domestic violence that an officer has requested, and the victim wants to have an advocate come out to them. They are able to help the victim negotiate community resources, the law enforcement and criminal justice system navigation, and be able to not make decisions for the victims, but to be able to educate them on their options and their choices. The other position is a domestic violence response unit advocate that works day shift with the DVRU officers and coordinates cases with them, doing a similar work, but it's not in the moment crisis that the afternoon response advocates work.
Thank you. And for that, we're paying $14 to $16 an hour.
Yes.
Okay. Just want to underscore that point.
Yes. So we're asking.
Can you also clarify what kind of training is required?
The training period is about 6 months long. People come to us already having experience in domestic violence community, being advocates, and they also have a bachelor's degree in social work. And often we have people with master's degrees in this work that are coming to work with us and on this. So the training program is about 6 months to be able to get fully up and running to be on their own, and then typically about 4 months later, we're having to hire somebody else after about a 3 to 6 month gap that there isn't anybody in those positions.
Okay. Thank you for those clarifications. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. I brought Vanessa with me too. She has a personal story that can express the benefit of this.
Thank you for having us here.
Thank
Good
you
morning.
For being here.
I am here today to talk about my experience as both a survivor and an advocate for domestic violence cases. More importantly, to fully support the amendment to this ordinance in its entirety. About 10 years ago, I had the misfortune to be involved in a domestic violence situation. I found myself and my three children on the street with no money, only with a diaper bag. I was told that I needed to of course, find shelter, to file a restraining order, to find an attorney, to apply for services, to call immigration, all of which were really good things that I needed to get done. However, I did not know how to do it, where to go, who to call. And I had no idea what to do. So the advocate's position is so fundamental to assist people in these situations. With my experience as an advocate and looking back, I can tell you that this could be situations of life and death, and an advocate can completely make the difference in those situations. Survivors need an advocate or a person that they can trust and talk to in order to help them identify their needs. Oftentimes, we have to navigate several systems, criminal justice system, immigration system, the welfare system. So that's just the tip of the iceberg. Because oftentimes DV cases are extremely complicated and convoluted, long-term and steady advocacy is fundamental. This is why I support the amendment in its entirety, and I am hoping and praying you will do so. As I said, advocates could be the difference between a life and death situation.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
This amendment does not have any fiscal impact. There is money that has been reallocated within the police bureau's budget, so there's nothing additional we're asking from the city. This will give us approximately 50% more hours of advocacy a year. A study was done in the last couple of years of how much the vacancies have impacted us, and we will be able to have more than 5,000 additional advocate hours by having long-term permanent employees in this position. This will also allow us to get out of the routine of being always in a training cycle and have people that have been up to speed, that know the job, that know the resources, the community, the relationships with police officers, and being able to more effectively help the folks that they serve in the community. And then it will also increase our flexibility. We're looking at being able to expand the hours of operation. So being able to, instead of having the advocates go off shift at midnight, being able to expand to 1 or 2 a.m., plus when there are other advocates that are either on vacation or sick, we don't have to have no advocates on duty. We'll be able to have additional staffing that provides seven-day-a-week coverage. The last at least 2 years, we have significantly had many times that because somebody is sick or on vacation or at training and there's no advocates available, or because of the vacancies, there are no advocates available to the police officers who have gotten used to being able to work with them, and they turn to that resource and it's just not there. This amendment would fix that.
Thank you. Great. Is there any public testimony on this item?
Yes, we have 10 people signed up.
Very good. Thank you.
The first three, please come on up, are Mimi German, Tiffany Kraft, and Charles Bridgecrane Johnson.
Good morning. Mimi, I'm sorry, is the green light on? It doesn't.
No, it's not.
Okay, thank you.
It's an ordinance.
It's an ordinance. I have a lot to say about the ordinance. My name is Mimi German. I have to start off by reading a poem, and this is not in honor of Micah, but because Micah is a poet and we still have his voice, I want to honor poetry to express my heart. This is called Rowing the River. It's about hate. I want to bend the metal rod, but the rod is too thick to bend, to press the rod together, end to end, back and forth, and back and forth, creating a kink in the metal at its weakest point, back, trying to bend this unmalleable rod until it breaks, and the flame, so hot, made a rod too solid, forth. I try to bend the bars of hate to crack the point of breakage. And Shards of metal pierce my skin, bleeding me back to rafting this longest river, a metal rod as oar, the depth and current, the magnitude, no boat launch and no mooring, white waters, impossible to navigate and so easy to drown. I don't normally shake up here. It's a hard day. So this is about domestic violence. I want you to add or consider adding to this domestic terrorism. That we need people who are a part of somewhere in this city who can go out to the families of Donna and Venus when the police kill their kids and there's no one to talk to them, that they need to find out on Facebook what happened to their kids. I want somebody to go out to the family of Terrell Johnson, who we still know so little about, when our cops feel the need to kill somebody for maybe seeing a box cutter. We need somebody for domestic terrorism to come to us, to the people, to explain to us how a whole community of cops allowed a murderer who just killed two people, slashing their necks and Micah's, to drink a beer, go into a bag that was on the sidewalk. None of those cops had their guns pulled out. Micah got away, not Micah, the murderer got away with yelling at these cops, standing there for over 2 minutes, and he gets arrested. No bullets fired, no guns drawn.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor Wheeler, commissioners. My name is Tiffany Kraft, and I'm a former adjunct professor and currently work as a faculty organizer with Faculty Forward Network. And I'm also a domestic violence survivor. Very briefly, December 19th, 2013, my almost ex-husband, high on drug and drink, entered our home and tried to snatch our joint five-month-old child out of his crib. My daughter, who was an adult, 18 at that time, blocked him. He beat her up, threw her against the wall, grabbed my car keys, went out, started my car, backed up, hit a utility truck parked behind us, and then I was on the phone with his father at that time, who was on his way to the scene, but he pulled the car and nearly hit me. I then called 911. Police came. Long story short, there was probable cause. He fled the scene. The police said they were going to collect him, get him, even with three adult witnesses. My mother was there as well. They never picked him up. I don't have a lot of faith in the police. Even with a restraining order, he would still do things like come in my backyard, call the cops, nothing. I was the nuisance in this case. And the things that now frighten me, and one of the things that actually helped me with the subsequent PTSD was not just psychotherapy, it was community activism. In particular, now when I'm on the streets, one of those big trucks swerves and revs, and it particularly usually does that around people of color, PTSD is triggered, right? These angry white males are in our city, and I know you know that. And so I was a bit upset with the meeting with Joey Gibson, Patriot Prayer. He is one of those angry, bigoted males that scare me, and that empowered him. You took that power you had that was protecting your citizens in the front line, which are single mothers like me that will be there Sunday, and gave it to him. And I can't tell you that how much that hurts. I've been in the faces of these guys. They are oppressors. They are using misappropriated Christian ethics that purposely, intentionally hurt women and minorities. That's what they are designing to do. And that's going to happen on Sunday. I'll be there. I hope you don't show up and shake anyone's hands. I appreciate you, Mayor. I want to see you do what's right for the city. And these guys aren't neutral, and nor are the cops. And I know a lot about cops, too, because my father's a retired officer. So I will be there, and I want to be safe. And my children won't be there, of course, but they're going to be worried about me. And I would just really like to say that there's a power over that they're exerting, and I don't appreciate it.
Thank you. And if I could just take one moment to comment, and I appreciate your statement. But I do feel like I need to comment because okay. I've been getting lots of questions about why did I meet with the organizer of the protest that's planned. We have actually reached out to the organizers of that protest and the organizers of the counter-protest. And the conversation was basically, I had two purposes. Number one, to ask them if they would voluntarily withdraw.
Right.
And number two, if they would not do that, we wanted to make sure that we established some parameters for public safety mm-hmm. and ask, it's, as you can imagine, it's a very volatile situation.
Absolutely.
So I didn't just meet with one side. I've met with, and there's not just two sides, there's actually multiple mm-hmm. sides in this issue that's coming up on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And the point wasn't to empower them or help them or anything else. It was to appeal for calm and for common sense. And you can disagree with whether it was the right strategy or not. I'm not claiming any monopoly on the truth. But as you know, my first request was to pull the permit.
Right.
And I stood alone in that request, except for Commissioner Udaly. I believe she was the only other elected official.
I was with you on that. I was happy.
Thank you, and I appreciate it. But we lost that one. So now the question is, how do we de-escalate the conversation?
Don't negotiate with terrorists like Joe Gibson.
I'm not negotiating. What I'm doing is I'm trying to get everybody just...
Okay.
We're still mourning here as a community.
Absolutely.
And the anger is rising.
Okay.
And now my objective as mayor is to do everything I can to maintain the peace. And if that means I have to talk to people to appeal to them to help me do it, that was a decision I made. And you can say it was the right decision or the wrong decision, but I want you to know why I made that decision.
Can I please say two more things?
Please, you may.
I would beg you not to cower to his demand to offer a statement that Jeremy Christian is not part of his gang.
I have offered no such statement,
nor will I. Okay, thank
you.
That's what he's saying on his little videos
posts. Facebook, YouTube, Twitter,
you
can say anything. It doesn't make it true.
Okay.
Thank you for your
One
statement.
One last thing, Mayor.
Can
I please offer you this book, Following in Dr. Kendall's Footsteps? It's called White Rage by Professor Carol Anderson. She's a professor at Emory University.
Yeah, sure. As long as when I'm done, I can return it because I'm not allowed to accept it.
We could have a library exchange going
perfect.
Every Wednesday as far as
Sounds
I'm concerned.
Good.
Then I get it back. Yeah,
I would. Maybe if you could just give it to Carla on your way.
Absolutely.
I'd be delighted, and I'm very appreciative. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, Charles Bridgecrane Johnson. And although our community has suffered two tragic high-profile deaths right now, I think that should influence our conversation that even though you sometimes can get caught up in nuts and bolts of municipal legislation, not just Amanda and Chloe, but everybody up there, when a domestic violence item is on the agenda, your briefing should tell us how many dead people we're talking about, how many permanently injured, because that is really, that's happening. At the end of this year, there'll be crime statistics, and it will tell us that Ricky and Taliesin are dead from a crime of violence, but they're sure as heck not going to be alone. I highly doubt the statistics are going to say that nobody died from domestic violence. And, of course, overwhelmingly, those victims are women, victims of violent men, violent white men. And so when we have even a nuts and boltsy thing like this about domestic violence, it's important for us to remember not just to do the work to prevent future victims, but to have an informed conversation about how badly did we fail during the previous fiscal year or the previous calendar year? What women lost their lives and any other victims of domestic violence lost their lives because we have imperfect structures, restraining orders, domestic violence protection orders. We need to constantly be thinking about tweaking those. Vision Zero is a buzz phrase that got attached to traffic deaths, but applies to mm-hmm. all deaths by violence. You know, 20, I haven't heard of a woman who's died from abuse this year. The way men are, I suspect there's already been one. Mm-hmm. But we really need to look to having a Vision Zero year as soon as possible for that. Thank you all.
Thank you.
The next three are Cameron Stark, Chris Ramsey, and Jesse Sponberg.
Good morning.
Carla, could you call the next one on the list?
How about Michelle Darr? I believe his last name.
My name is Cameron Stark. I believe that Black Lives Matter. I kind of want to mirror what Mimi said when she said that we need to put something in this ordinance to expand probably the definition of domestic violence, because there are a lot of instances of police violence. I mean, domestic means here at home. And we are facing a whole lot of violence from the police. I'm sure that Quanice Hayes and Terrell Johnson are not considered under the current scope of domestic violence. But if you look at it in a broader spectrum, yes, they are. They were hurt by those who were scheduled to protect them. And you just also, you can't look at domestic violence without looking at what's going on with the Portland police. I mean, Chief Mike Marshman is, you know, your police chief, and we all know what happened with his stepson. I'm not trying to get too off topic about that, but when you have a police force that's ran by, you know, domestic violence perpetrators, then it's really hard to trust the police when it comes to that. And I know you understand that. I've also known many women who are victims of domestic violence here in Portland. And when they call the police, they in sometimes turn get arrested themselves when they didn't start the altercation. And they definitely weren't the ones that were most left damaged. I've seen that as a pattern and an issue. I think that needs to be addressed. I mean, there's a brand new women's prison being built, and it's just going to fill more bodies in there. It's a system that's broken. I don't have a whole lot more to say on it, but there you need to expand the scope of what you look at as domestic violence, I think.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Chris Ramsey. I just want to acknowledge that $14 to $16 an hour for a domestic violence advocate shows how little we care about violence, even inside of the police budget. If you require a bachelor's degree, any simple math would say you would never be able to fulfill your loans. So just showing that that's actually important. When I think of domestic violence, it makes me think of a situation between two people, traditionally, you know, as people in a relationship. But individual people in a community can be victims of domestic violence at the hands of the community that they live in. And marginalizing people through ignorant policy or outright neglect puts them at an increased risk for domestic violence in their community and in their home. Community violence is domestic violence. Police violence is domestic violence. TriMet violence, domestic violence. ICE violence is domestic violence. I have been the victim of domestic violence and have utilized the police, the judiciary, and community resources to escape. When you come up with a plan on how to try to escape your violator, if you can't trust the police, there is no one to call. If you can't trust that the police would come and help your friend if you were on their couch and he chased you, there is no one to call. And how, I don't know. On a side note, when I left the courthouse yesterday, I was followed in a huge truck and yelled at. Those types of incidences in our community where we're attacking people who are standing up to white nationalism in our community makes those people that facilitate that type of mentality fired up at home, and everyone around is at an increased risk for direct violence. Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to mirror what these citizens both said, and that is we can't look at domestic violence without looking at the institutionalized nature of it and how it runs rife through all of our institutions.
And
I'm sorry, could
you state your name for the record? I apologize.
Oh, my name is Michelle Dar.
Thank you, Michelle.
So, I want to address the institutionalized nature of domestic violence and bring attention to the fact that it runs so rife through all of our public institutions that it shows up everywhere, of course, in our families. And our institutions are responsible. We need to hold our institutions responsible. We need to hold you responsible for the unreal violence that has been unleashed by the Portland police upon communities of color in particular, and how that violence has spread to more violence. And so this makes you responsible. This puts that blood is on your hands, because this system that's been perpetrated here and all over makes everybody accountable, makes everybody responsible for what happened. Without addressing that, there's nothing to address.
Thank you.
I've said enough.
The next three are Margaret Zabrowski, Mary Spagnola, and Allison Sosa.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wheeler. Mayor Wheeler. I'm Peggy Zabrowski, Margaret Zabrowski, legally. In my career in public health with Multnomah County, I saw many victims of domestic abuse and am very supportive of efforts to increase their services. But I'm going to unabashedly admit that I'm using this because it's the most closely related to police issues, because and we're experiencing an emergency in our state. Thank you for acknowledging that and standing up to the police union in your call for a police chief. The danger to people standing up for racial justice right now is increasing exponentially. Oh, I think I messed it up. No.
There you go.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we have a problem with the Portland police. They shoot people running away from them in the back. You've experienced two deaths in the short time that you've been in your role as mayor. Two deaths of young black males. And the police themselves have been linked to white supremacist causes. The white supremacists have a long history in Oregon, as we all know. It's on you folks, please, to do what you can against this very powerful union to initiate an investigation into what's going on inside the Portland police and root it out. You also need to throw your weight in, if you have it, with the FBI, telling them they must investigate the white supremacist networks in our city, in our state and city. We are calling, as of today, we will be calling on the wonderful investigative news sources in our country, some of which live here in Portland. The Observer's work has been sterling. We've all learned a lot from that. I'm right. It's right. It's Portland Observer with the Justice Series. Do I have
so.
It right? Sorry. But we'll be calling on Criminal and Slate and Atlantic and people who've done the work to do that research themselves, so we can hold the feet of the people of Oregon to the fire. Okay. And I'm looking to you guys to take responsibility. Things are going to get worse. People are in pain. You got yelled at today for a reason. People are at risk.
Thank you.
There are a lot of threats, and there's a lot of people feeling permitted to do open violence. We know how the right works. They, you know, it's always the lone crazy who does the crime. They intentionally make that happen. You know, that is a psychological thing, you know, trick, manipulation, that they're very good at. And you can't let it happen anymore.
I agree. I think about it all the time. Good morning.
Thank you. Mary Spagnola. I'm pretty nervous. I've never addressed city council before. Okay. I'm just going to read. I'm afraid of the police. I'm afraid because they have all the weapons and gear and protection. And I'm afraid because when someone is killed by a police officer in this city, the city basically says, good job. If the police are supposed to protect us and they see us as enemies, who protects us from the police? If an officer just doing his job means someone has to die, we have big problems. If an officer is so afraid for their own life, even with all their protection, they feel they must kill someone, maybe they aren't doing a good job. The narrative needs to change. I expect more from the city of Portland, from the mayor, and from the PD. Why is our response not, how could this have been avoided? All the investigations and reviews that result in he was just doing his job response are heartless and disgusting. It's clearly about you all covering your butts instead of honoring a life lost, instead of accountability for causing pain. My concerns are now acutely focused on the racist violence in our community. The recent loss of lives should serve as clear evidence that this is an urgent matter. What are we doing right now to stop racist violence? There are community members and organizations who have been doing this work. Why are you not working with them? Why are you not seeking counsel with people of color leaders like Teresa Rayford? If members of our community want to go out and protest this upcoming white supremacist rally on Sunday, they will be at risk for violence from not only Nazis, but also Portland police. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Oh, it's lovely to see your faces again after a very long time. My name is Allison Sosa. I'm not going to bash the police, although FTP always. And as a person of color, I don't have the luxury of calling the police. I was raped in October on the hood of a car by a stranger, and I didn't call the police. I went back to work working for the DPO. I acted like it was a normal day. That didn't shock me, and it shouldn't shock anybody here in this room. One in three women and one in four men encounter domestic violence. It doesn't matter how we look at it, how we paint it. It's an issue that continually gets ignored. And we're like, oh, it's great. We're going to wear a little ribbon. And it's going to be awesome. And, oh, awareness. You know what I mean? But, yes, there is a systemic problem with the police being racist. And for me, coming into this situation and knowing and seeing all of you do your job, my job is to educate my children, to weaponize myself with my education, and that's what I've done. I'm not somebody who wants notoriety. I'm not somebody that feels like I necessarily need help because I have my community. What I cannot stand by is seeing people not make a livable wage. I've been texting a friend actually just now because she lives in South Carolina and she is my only source of support in this matter because she is as much of a fighter as I am. When we're talking about 40% of police families encounter domestic violence and 20% of combat veterans, of which I am a veteran, you know, I am a domestic, you know, violence survivor, I don't ever feel safe. I don't feel safe in this room. I'm one of less than 8 people of color. So when you talk about don't interrupt, you're silencing me. And I don't appreciate it. I've worked hard to get to where I am. I was a street kid. I came back after traveling the world, and yet Portland has not changed. It's the fourth night of Ramadan. I spent 5 years overseas, and I spent this weekend breaking iftar over at the Met because that's the only place I felt at peace. It's the only place I felt safe. And I purposely didn't come the night of the vigil to iftar because you were going to be there, Ted. I don't feel like your opinion is credible to me. I don't think it applies to me. And it's not fair that I get to sit in a room while my friends are outside because they speak up. So I'll bite my tongue and sit in this chair and thank you for your time.
Last person who signed up is Edith Gillis.
I'm Edith Gillis, and I'm holding up my right hand as a stop sign, but also as a visual reminder that the only way you can stop violence, domestic violence, police violence, fascist violence, is to address the entire hand of violence. And we talk about the tallest finger being the bad guy, and that's the only one. Or just the little thumb, the victim sucking their thumb, feeling sorry for themselves, they asked for it. But it's also the pointer finger that points out who's allowed to be abused. Houseless, poor, mentally ill, people of color, First Nations, gender minorities, religious minorities, political activists. They're pointed out as the ones that's okay to impoverish, to terrorize, to traumatize, to abuse. And then there's the ring finger, those who feel wedded to this violence, who make excuses. Oh, I can't do anything about it, I'm just doing my job. And the little white, little pinky says, oh, I'm just a little witness. I can't do anything about it. Well, we've got to stop. In the Judaic, the Christian, and the Muslim tradition, we are demanded to be right witnesses, to be upstanding and support those. Leviticus 19:33 says, love your neighbors yourself, care for those who are strangers and oppressed, remember you were like them too, and open your heart and your home to them. We need to do that. Now, how can you at the city council do something to stop domestic police and other violence? It's to say no to hiring police who are coming from the military, who are bringing the same fake weapons at the scene like they do with the so-called improvised explosive devices. They'll put on the scene and pretend that the person they just murdered was a terrorist or an insurgent. We've had two guns on the same day, fake, put out there as false evidence where there was no excuse if they had been real guns to kill those people. I have known that most of the police force, and I'm hearing this from police themselves, because there are a few good ones, saying that most of them are fascists who are using fear and force to get their way to terrorize and control folks. And most of them are domestic violence abusers. When I've called the Portland police to protect us from abusers, they refuse to come. We had been terrorized by someone, broken into our home, destroyed property, raped me, and a police officer came to my home because I cannot get a restraining order, because the restraining order in the state of Oregon, I've tried to have Portland advocate for me that the restraining order should not be limited to family members or sexual partners. This was a neighbor, a criminal defense attorney. We need to be able to expand it so that the police don't come in and say, no, don't ever come when she calls, and verbally abuse me worse than all the abusers. My mother was killed because of racism and domestic violence. The same railroad tracks that were unsafe and killed Modox and Klamas, dozens of them, were not noticed and not changed. But when a white woman, the daughter of a multimillionaire, was killed, same purpose, same place, oh, suddenly her life matters. Well, every life matters, and you can make sure that in how you talk about folks, how you schedule your time, who you welcome here, what kind of policies you have, how you control who is hired, who is supervised, who is fired, and that you have records of police not be closed so that the good cops are not allowed to grow up, and the bad cops given away and again. We've had cops kill or brutalize almost everyone in my neighborhood. You've got to stop that. And you can. It's in your hands.
Thank you. Appreciate it. One more?
Someone else wanted to speak. Yeah, come on.
And folks, I want to apologize. I'm going to have to leave fairly soon.
Mayor, we actually have emergency ordinances coming.
Yes, no, I understand.
So I think we got to get through the agenda.
Well, I can't stay because there is something else related to what we are all talking about that I need to attend to. So maybe we can...
Tomorrow.
We'll just have to do them tomorrow. Sorry. Sorry for the interruption.
I'm Bati Alon. I've never spoke here either, but I wanted to speak on domestic violence being expanded as well to domestic terrorists. Because yesterday when we were at the arraignment, there was a man who came who said he was a friend of Jeremy Christian. He was wearing red laces, which we know speaks to white supremacy, specifically that he has shed or spilled blood for his cause. We know that for a fact. He admitted that he was Christian's friend. He was escorted kindly out of the building, and we were told we were safe because he went across the street. None of us felt safe. We went outside the building scared that they were around the corner. We know that's what they do. We know that they communicate and they want to hurt us. When we came to your office to ask for protection for our community, we were placated and told to go away. So I left yesterday having no faith in your ordinances or your care for this community because that was a real circumstance that our community needed protection, and we were basically ignored. And that's all I want to say today.
Thank you. Is that it?
That's all.
Great. Call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Udaly.
I want to thank city and county staff for coming up with a plan to make our domestic violence reduction unit more efficient, more effective, expand the hours, and better ensure that domestic violence survivors have a consistent advocate to guide them through the system. Aye.
Fritz.
I thank those testifiers who actually referenced what we're talking about today and the $14 to $16 an hour. Mayor, I'm concerned that the Police Bureau was able to find $332,000 within their budget to reassign to this when we've just been through a very difficult budget exercise. It begs the question of why was this amount of money available, and I'm really glad that it's going to this cause. And I also want to reflect and report on what I heard from the iftar at the iftar on Saturday from Wajdi Saeed. And he was talking to his community and said that the Muslim, Shiite and Sunni people need to figure out how to get along. He says, we're all Muslims. And what I'm feeling today in response to the challenges that we've heard over the past week and more, we are all devastated also. And we're all on the same side. We want to stop this hatred from gaining a grip in our society. So as hard as it is, we've got to figure out how to do that. And Mayor, I thank you for your leadership of the police and in this tragedy. Thank you, Commissioner Udaly, for your work as the President of the Council and speaking for us last week and over the weekend. Aye.
Wheeler.
I appreciate what people were saying today. And I know people are hurting and they're struggling, and they're trying to find the center, and they're trying to find what, where, and who in this community that they can rely on and who they can trust. And I heard loudly and clearly for many of the people testifying, you do not think I am that individual, and I can accept that. But I'm also going to say this. I started my day by being called a Nazi. I started my day by being accused of perpetrating murders that were committed in this community last week. I have been threatened by people on all sides of the political spectrum. And I want you to know this from me personally, because I don't think I've done a very good job
of letting people into who I actually am and what I actually stand for. And I want you to know I stand with you in opposition to the hate and the violence and the bigotry and the terrorism that took place in this community on Friday. Now, we're not going to build a trusting relationship overnight. You don't know me. You don't know me. And what I would ask for is, whether you hate me or not, we're stuck together for the next 3.5 years. So let's figure out how we can work together. Let's try. All right? Let's try. Let's see if we can work together and make some real progress in a community that is hurting. And that's my goal. I'm going to do my level best to protect everybody's safety on Saturday. I'm going to do my level best. And as I say, I'm sorry, Sunday, and I'm working, you know, with lots of people in this community to help make that happen. I think we can show the world that we can have disputes, that people can have their First Amendment rights respected. And at the end of the day, my goal is to make sure everybody goes home to their families. That's what I want. That's what's in my heart right now. That's where I am. And so I have heard what you've said, and I appreciate those of you who've come up to express honestly and forthrightly your opinions, and I'm hearing what you're saying. I just want you to know that. I don't even remember if I voted, so I'll vote again. Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Thank
Mayor,
you.
Before you adjourn, I need to